Justice Connolly will be presiding on the last case of the day. With that information, give me a moment to get out of the courtroom, and Justice Wright, as I said, will preside.
Good morning. You may proceed.
My name is Gail Collins, and just for the record of approval of the court, guardian ad litem, additional time. Parties have spoken this morning. It's the court to allow 10 minutes per person, guardian ad litem, to speak last. It's approval.
I thought we gave you 15 minutes per side.
But the parties have asked that I reduce to 10, and that there be 10 minutes for both the defense counsel and him.
So you're not asking for more time in total, just reallocation?
With the
permission granted.
I'm a deputy Madison County attorney, and I was the prosecutor in this case. First issue I'll address very briefly. Whether there is a final order, I would submit there is. As well known in juvenile courts, we have a substantial right and a special proceeding. The case law is clear. The judge in this particular case had not appointed counsel for non-custodial dad, non-allegation dad in the beginning. However, when the termination of parental rights was filed, he appointed counsel and had counsel throughout. When it came time to make the decision, after 3 days of trial, the court decided that because there had not been counsel appointed at the initial removal date, that he could not proceed to look at the other issues and declined to deal with the issues. But basically said, well, we'll give the dad further time. Which, in some ways, the logic of that is questionable. The case.
So, did the judge deny the petition to terminate or defer ruling on it?
I think he denied by the very fact that he said, "I am not going to terminate."
Where in the order did he say he's not going to terminate?
Well, he declined to terminate. So, I think that is tantamount to this. And I think that the Keister case clearly says, if there is a flaw in the original adjudication under subsection 5 and 6 and 7, pardon me, that the court can still proceed
does
under
a trial,
1, 2, and 3.
Does a trial judge have authority to defer ruling?
I think the Kenna case dealt with that. At that particular case, in the Kenna case, was a case where there was a trial on the TPR, and then after the parties had rested, the court conducted three more hearings and then declined to terminate or deny the termination of parental rights. The Court of Appeal reversed and said that there was sufficient evidence and upheld, reversed the trial judge.
That was the case out of the separate juvenile court of Sarpy County?
I'm not certain where Kenna is out of. But there was like an 8-month period.
Do you think the facts in that case are similar to this case?
On the jurisdictional issue, yes.
Well, what about the termination of the parental rights or the denial of the termination of parental rights? In that case, the judge finally made a decision at some point. And in this case, do we have a decision by the court?
I think there is a decision by the court. I think he said he's not terminating, period, and that maybe in the future he would consider it, but at this point he denied the termination of parental rights. There was sufficient evidence under grounds 1, 2, and 3 of the Keister case, just analogous to the Keister case. His decision was an error of the law because he believed that because there had been no appointment of counsel in the pre-adjudication stage, that he could not proceed. I think that's a decision and a denial.
I'm a little confused. At the adjudication stage or at the pre-adjudication stage?
Pardon? At the pre-adjudication stage, he denied counsel. It was a non-custodial dad with no allegations against dad, and prior to any decisions or any placement hearing or prior to any matters being decided, dad had denied counsel. I think that does
Dad appeared prior to the adjudication.
Yes, he did.
And the courts said no counsel at this point. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then the child was adjudicated. Is that correct?
Yes. And there was a placement hearing before any denial or any advisement of rights. In fact, I think it was after advisement of rights. And the court denied placement with him at that time because he failed to comply with background checks, etc.
Having representation at the adjudication stage doesn't prevent the court from proceeding on a termination of parental rights.
That's the whole point.
Under certain sections.
Yes.
So you're saying that the judge's failure to enter an order in one way or the other with regard to the father's parental rights is tantamount to a decision of denying this state's motion to terminate the parental rights.
Absolutely.
And therefore, we could decide that on our de novo review.
I think it was an erroneous interpretation of law that he could not terminate his
So what would we have to look at then? The record determined two things, whether the conditions were present and whether it was in the best interest of the child
yes.
to do that?
I think you first of all have to decide whether he's afforded his statutory rights under 43279.001. The record shows that that was completely
We would have
done.
To, I beg your pardon, that we would have to determine that father had due process.
Yes, and the record shows he had due process.
Even absent the earlier appointment of
yes.
counsel. And if we were satisfied with that, then we would be in a position under our standard of review to take up the record
yes.
and review whether or not the purported denial of termination was warranted. Is that the sequence?
Absolutely. I think you need to look at the record from October of 2014 onwards, where he was afforded statutory rights and consequences, afforded due process, which he was, and then to look at, based upon the Keister case, the Kenna case, and the Jordana case, which all cited in my brief, and for pieces to look at the grounds, and the grounds I think the court is limited to, and I obviously are going to be abandonment, neglect, willful neglect, and of course the court must look at best. And I think the record is replete on those issues, or on those facts, with clear and convincing evidence that
notwithstanding
those grounds
the prior adjudication for dad.
Pardon?
Notwithstanding the absence of an adjudication
yes.
with respect to the father, if the due process is met and the evidence supports it. Is that right? Is that
absolutely.
Position?
I okay. think that you are looking at the lack of a prior adjudication. You are looking at the TPR, the filing of the motion for a TPR as a functional equivalent of a first filing, if you will. And there the record is that he had due process, that he had all his statutory rights explained to him, and that he understood.
Well, if he had to have participated in the adjudication, how would you ever get that? Would you have to re-adjudicate the same issues?
No, I think it's almost like analogous. Well, the facts are always going to be.
Those really aren't. The adjudication isn't. That's apparent from the record as far as.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The adjudication was apparent from the record.
Yes, absolutely.
And then the state proceeded to terminate rights under different grounds or different sections that wouldn't have been relevant to the adjudication.
There was actually five grounds stated mm-hmm. in the supplemental petition. And in the supplemental petition, there was grounds 1, 2, and 3, which are abandonment, neglect, willful neglect. Those, I think, are still pertinent. The other was reasonable efforts, which I think because of the functional equivalent of a first adjudication and this 15 to 17 months would not be before this court.
Ms. Collins, I'd like to go back to the jurisdictional question for just a second. The order that we're talking about, to be clear, is the one that was filed on May 21, 2015. And as I'm reading that order, the only thing that I find, a single sentence that says, since counsel was not appointed as the statute requires, the court does not feel it is in a position to terminate the parental rights of Mr. Jordan at this time. That's the only language in that order that we have that bears on what the court's disposition, if any, of the TPR was, correct?
Well, there's other language to that decision, but the core question is he misinterpreted or never considered the Keisha G case, and because of that...
I guess what I'm really asking, though, I'm not seeing anywhere in there where he said, for example, therefore I deny the petition for termination of parental rights.
I think that's pretty...
We just have this one sentence...
It may not be the most artful of sentences, but it clearly means it.
That's where you're deriving absolutely. That he's denied the termination.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
It's analogous to the Pena case, I think.
Are you suggesting that on appeal, this court should make those decisions, those factual decisions, or are you suggesting that if we find this was a final order, that we remand it with instructions to the trial court to make the finding? To determine it on the merits. Which are you asking?
The court, that's a court determination. I think this court can make that determination that grounds 1, 2, and 3 existed, plus best interest. You are a de novo review, and it's a question of fact or law. You can view the record independent of conclusions arrived on by the trial judge. So I think you can make that. As in the Kenna case, they reversed... Basically, terminated.
There were live witnesses at this termination of parental rights trial, correct?
Three full days and numerous witnesses.
Yes, and so assessments of credibility, to the extent we would want to give any deference to the trial court, we don't have the benefit of what the trial court's assessment might be.
Of credibility, but I believe my brief fully... talks about the evidence that was supported, and even if you give credence to defense witnesses, it doesn't change the facts or the abandonment issue of absolutely no contact for a period of 6 months. So I think there's more than clear and convincing evidence on grounds 1 and 2. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Kathleen Rocky. I represent Charles Jordan, who is the biological father of KJ, Krishard Jordan, who is the minor child who's the subject of this case. I was appointed to represent Mr. Jordan in the fall of 2014. And before my appointment as his attorney, he appeared in a case in Madison County Court, in response to a juvenile petition that had been filed that made allegations as to misconduct and certain actions on the part of the mother of Krishard and his siblings, Ms. Petzold. That juvenile court petition was served on Mr. Jordan. He appeared at the first hearing in November of 2012, and at that hearing he filled out a financial affidavit and he asked for a court-appointed attorney. The court engaged in an exchange with Ms. Collins at that hearing. And at that hearing, the judge specifically told Mr. Jordan, I'm not going to address the question of an attorney. You can hire an attorney. Once allegations are filed against you, you would be entitled to have an attorney, and we would address that with you at that time. Mr. Jordan questioned that. He was confused by that statement, and the court went on to say, that this is essentially, his request for custody was essentially a quote-unquote civil matter, and that was appropriate for district court. And then the court went on again to say the following, there is no right to have an attorney fight for custody of your child. That was a critical and key statement that was made by Judge stopper at that time.
So you think this is when things went off the rails?
Things went off the rails at that point. And it was complicated by the fact that at that point, the court looked to Ms. Collins and said, are you potentially going to be filing something that would address some actions on the part of Mr. Jordan? And she indicated that she had that under consideration, and there was a likelihood that she might do that.
Was there under the statute's jurisdiction over by a father?
I think there was.
Father?
I think at that time there was jurisdiction.
If you had jurisdiction over the child, did you have jurisdiction over the biologic father at that point, regardless of allegations against the father?
I believe there was jurisdiction over him. His rights as a parent were implicated immediately upon the filing of that juvenile petition, because the child was taken and placed into foster care at the time of the filing of the juvenile court petition. And that very day, when he requested a court-appointed attorney, he asked for placement of the child, represented himself, testified about why he believed the child should be placed with him, and that request was denied, and the child remained in foster care where he's been ever since. So at that point, his rights were dramatically impacted by what happened in the case.
Wasn't he given due process when he was appointed a lawyer for the termination proceedings?
It was extremely important that attorney be appointed at that time, and yes, there was some due process
so
accorded at that time.
So what does the prior adjudication have to do with this case?
It has a lot to do with this case because the state at the trial attempted to bring forth much evidence concerning an entire period of many years of Mr. Jordan's behavior, including this critical period between November of 2012 and September of 2014, when he requested counsel and didn't get it, and an attorney was finally appointed with the filing of a supplemental petition.
Well, what would counsel do for someone who doesn't take care of his child or doesn't complete the visits? What could have been done at the adjudication proceeding to change that?
Well, it would have been helpful at the adjudication proceeding, but it would have been helpful during that entire period after adjudication. And
for what? To rehabilitate the father?
It would be about how you participate in a case, advising a parent on how you need to remain involved, how you can be involved.
So you're
can
saying
understand
if
case
had the biologic father had counsel during that time frame, how shall I say this? I'm a little removed from the practice. He could have made facts.
I think he could have had a greater understanding of the significance of his actions. He would have had a better understanding of the law that is imposed upon a parent in that situation where their child is taken away and you have 15 of 22 months and you have words like adjudication and disposition and, you know, terms that are not readily known by people who are average citizens.
Ms. Rocky, I understand your argument thus far to address the issue of due process on the merits that the judge applied in saying I'm not going to go forward with termination. I want to backtrack to the jurisdictional question. You heard my colloquy with Ms. Collins about the only sentence I see in this order is this somewhat ambiguous one that says, since counsel was not appointed as the statute requires, the court does not feel it is in a position to terminate the parental rights of Mr. Jordan at this time. Is that a denial of the petition for termination?
I think it is probably a deferment in reality. It is ambiguous, and I wrote ambiguous in my notes when I came here today. I'm not sure what the judge actually meant, but I do think the judge deferred ruling, and I think
What was the point of deferring the ruling? To give the father additional time to be a better parent?
I think the point of the ruling was, well, in a sense, yes. And
there would be no other reason not to make a decision one way or the other, would there?
Right.
And what about the child? What's the child's status?
The child's status is the child remains in foster care and has been in the same foster home the entire time, and that I believe is in the record since he was removed from that point up until today's date. He has remained in the same foster home with a sibling, with a brother. I do think the court deferred the ruling, and I think that
if that's the case,
the later part of that order, which he talks about vacating an earlier order that he entered, because after Mr. Jordan got counsel and I was appointed, we went in front of the court, and we asked that visitation be established, that it be reinstated. And the Department of Health and Human Services resisted that. The state resisted that. And that order, or that was entered by the court in about a month prior to the first day we had the hearing on the termination of parental rights, the judge said no, he wouldn't be allowed to reinstate visitation, that I was trying to attempt him to get reinstated. And at that, the judge felt, I think, so compelled by the argument of the denial of due process that he felt he had to correct that too. And so he went back and he vacated that order and gave him the opportunity to start exercising visitation again. And that goes to my argument about why we don't have a final order in this case. There's a series of cases that have come before you where you've been asked that very question. You've been asked that question in cases where case plan goals have been changed. Is that a final order? You've been asked that question.
Okay, so what would we do with this case?
I think my preference obviously is that you affirm the decision of the court.
But that means we have jurisdiction. So you're saying there is a final order from which we can act?
Well, it's complicated, I guess. I'm not sure. I think one option is to say that the court was right. The denial of due process rights significant in this case.
We can only get to that analysis if we have jurisdiction, right?
That's true.
So are you asking us to dismiss the case?
Well, I guess, in a sense, I'm asking that the appeal be dismissed because I think that I've argued that there is not a final appealable order and that it goes to the crux of the argument that the due process rights were violated in the first place.
Again,
so the state gets to start
sum up for me why your client's due process rights were violated.
The statute that I'm relying on, Your Honor, is 43-279-01. That's the statute that directs the county court as to the rights advisement that's to be given to a biological parent when they appear in a juvenile proceeding. And that includes not only the nature of the proceeding and the consequences and dispositions, but also the right to engage and or get legal counsel appointed. Judge Stauffer was looking at another section of that statute back in November of 2012 that talked about the right to counsel on the part of a guardian or a custodian or a step-parent, and mistakenly took that section and applied it to Mr. Jordan, who was instead a biological parent, and as a result had a right to counsel at that point in time. So that's the distinction that is made there. I think that, and what was important too, was the evidence that was presented about what transpired during this entire period of time. Mr. Jordan exercised visitation. I'll agree it wasn't every single possible opportunity he had, but he exercised visitation. He stayed in contact with the biological mother. He attended some team meetings. He was involved, but he did not truly understand that Ms. Petzold would not be reunified. In fact, he thought she was going to be reunified with the child, all the children, and because she had made some positive steps in progress during the case. And then suddenly, in the summer of 2014, she relinquished her parental rights, and the state immediately took it upon itself at that point to take advantage of that and filed the petition to terminate at that point
in
time.
Well, you say he exercised visitation, but doesn't the record show that during the 22-month period from KJ's placement into foster care in November of 2012 until the termination motion was filed on August 27th, 2014, that he visited KJ for a total of 8 times and a total of 14 hours?
I'm sure that's probably accurate.
You call that exercising visitation?
That was exercising visitation. It had supervised visitation. Some of those were therapeutic visitations where he was working on his relationship with his son, all the while thinking, I don't have the right to fight for custody of my child because that's what the county court told him. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Brad Eastland, and I am the guardian ad litem in this case. And so I'm the guardian ad litem for the juvenile. And I've also filed a cross appeal of the ruling that was entered in this case.
Jurisdiction, yes or no?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because there was an order entered. I mean, we had a 3-day trial witnesses and testimony, and everybody had their opportunity to be heard in closing arguments just like a trial. And then Judge Stouffer entered an order, and I agree with you that the only thing he ordered is that one sentence that you've referred to. But that sentence was an order because the order essentially was I'm not terminating his parental rights.
If the sentence had said, I'm going to schedule another hearing on this in 6 months, would we have a final order?
I believe yes. I don't believe that the statutes or the scheme allow a judge to say, I had a 3-day trial, somebody filed a petition terminating parental rights, we had a trial on it, and I'm just not going to rule on it, I'm just going to defer ruling down the line and just decide sometime later. I think that would have been appealable if he had done that and said, we could have appealed and said, no, you have to rule. That's how it works. We filed a motion, we had a trial, you're the decision maker, make a ruling. And so my position is that there is jurisdiction because essentially what the judge did is said, I'm not terminating his parental rights. No, he didn't say it in those words. But by not terminating his parental rights, if he would have said I'm going to terminate his parental rights, then that's a ruling. But if he did anything else, then he's not terminating his parental rights.
Suppose the rest of the order said everything it says, and that one sentence said, I'm taking the petition for termination of parental rights under advisement. Final order then?
No, I don't think that would be a final order at that point, because he hadn't ruled yet. But
So what's his ruling on the termination?
His ruling was, I heard the evidence and I decided I'm not terminating his rights at this time. I mean, I agree with you, it doesn't say that in those many words. But I don't see how else you could interpret it. Because he doesn't say, I'll take it under advisement, I don't know what I'm going to do. Basically said, I'm not
terminating. What meaning could this order be, then, I'm not terminating parental rights? But what he says, I'm not going to do it at this time. At this time makes no difference. He's just saying I'm not terminating parental rights after hearing this case.
Right. I agree with you. That's what the way I would interpret what the judge did in this case.
But given that, can we, on our de novo review, make a decision on the termination of the parental rights if, in fact, it was not decided in the court below?
Well, I believe that you can, and I am asking you to do so.
What would you base your position on that we can make that determination if the issue was not decided in the lower court?
Well, my position would be that this court has de novo review of these types of cases. So you have the record. The record is in front of you. It's all of the testimony, all of the exhibits, everything is there. You can review it.
Do you think that record presents questions of witness credibility?
Well, I'm certain that perhaps some of it could. But you have enough in this record, even if you don't know witness credibility, that you could still find that paragraphs 1 and 2 are present.
And what are those? What are those 1 and 2 under that section? What are they?
Paragraph 1 is abandonment, and paragraph 2 is neglect. And the whole due process.
Think there's any dispute in the record as to those two positions?
I don't believe there is. I mean, you could look in the record on the abandonment issue, and it's right in there. It's in my brief also. The 6 months previous to the filing of this petition, no contact. Charles Jordan and his child, not a phone call, nothing. And I understand that the cases have talked about, well, you can't look at that in a vacuum and just take these 6 months, even though that's what the statute does actually say. But even if you go before that, okay, well, then let's look at the circumstances before that. Well, before that, there was a 22-month period from when the kid went into foster care until it was filed that he only had 8 visits. He could argue there was more, but even if he could, so there was 10 visits over a 22-month period. And then you went 6 months without seeing them. How is the circumstances of that not abandonment? I believe it is abandonment.
Okay, then we, if you, assuming that we could do that, what would be the evidence of best interest that was established in this hearing?
Well, then the evidence of best interest would be just that the child, of course, needs permanency. And if I remember correctly, the record talked about where his placement is with a foster family. The foster mother testified about him being placed with them on around November 1st of 2012. He had lived with them continuously. And so you could use those things for best interest. And just generally that this child needs permanency. His mother had relinquished her parental rights, and the father, in my view, had abandoned and neglected under the statute. And so, therefore, the best interests of the child are that he needs permanency and parental rights should be terminated. So, and as far as the due process issue goes, Charles Jordan received due process. I will concede that when he very first appeared in 2012 and he asked for a lawyer, I think probably under the statute he should have been given a lawyer.
And Ms. Rocky's argument is that if he had been given a lawyer, he perhaps would have made different decisions with respect to his parenting and with respect to the pending litigation. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would respond that is it if you're going to be a parent, do you need to have and do what you need to do for a child and take care of them? Do you really need to have a lawyer there telling you what to do about how you're supposed to take care of your child? I mean, I don't believe it would have made any difference. Even if he did have a lawyer, is the lawyer supposed to sit there and say, oh, you need to go visit your child?
Well, at the time of the adjudication, the father's rights weren't affected at that point anyway, were they?
Right, right.
So what rights would the lawyer be providing for the father at the adjudication?
Well, there wouldn't be any other than to just say, well, there's a case plan perhaps or something like that. But still, the father has, you know, the opportunity and the need to take care of his child, regardless of if he has a lawyer or not. And through that time, he didn't. I mean, he went, the maximum amount of visits were 3 hours. And then he would go, it's in the record, but like 2 months without having a visit. Okay, now I'll have another 2-hour visit. And then go 2 months without a visit. Well, now I'm going to have a 1-hour visit. So whether or not he had a lawyer during any of those times, I would argue is immaterial, because he still was afforded his due process regarding termination of parental rights, because once that was filed, he asked for a lawyer, he got one. Had a lawyer throughout the entire process, and so his due process rights were not violated regarding paragraphs 1, 2, and 3. So I believe that this court can de novo review. This court has jurisdiction, A. This court can de novo review the record, enter a ruling, and I would ask that ruling be that his parental rights should be terminated. And that's what I'm asking. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Mr.
Is there any rebuttal time? Okay. That concludes this argument, and I am recused on the next case, and Justice Connolly will preside.